Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Earlier this week, I appeared on GB Wire's Unfiltered program hosted by our very own Darius to discuss the link between globalization, the Taliban, and Donald Trump. We had a very lively and interesting conversation. In this forum, I typically talk about Islam and spirituality. But it may be a good idea to share my thoughts on globalization with you today, because this subject, globalization, is very important and it impacts every single one of us in some way and in some measure. Globalization affects our jobs, our consumptions, our cultural norms, and also how we vote in elections. In the short time that we have today, inshallah, I will discuss what globalization means, its history, and some of its questionable consequences. And these consequences of globalization has created a rising backlash against globalization around the world in the past 2-3 decades. So let's begin with what globalization means. The term globalization is difficult to define, but it is not difficult to describe. Let me give you a real life scenario that we can all relate to. And this scenario shows how globalization affects and shapes our everyday life. Since Anima is not here today with us, let's use him as the fictitious character for our scenario. Nima lives in Fresno, California. He starts his day with a cup of coffee. He purchases his coffee from Trader Joe's, but the coffee beans actually come from plantations in Brazil. After breakfast, Nima dresses to go to work. Every piece of his apparel, his underwear, socks, shirt, pants, shoes, every piece of his apparel is made in different parts of the world. Then Nima gets into his car, a Honda, which was designed in Japan. Its parts were made in South Korea using Indonesian rubber, Chinese aluminum, and Russian steel. On his way to the office, Nima being such a wonderful young man, he decides to call his mom, Sonia Khanom. And Aga Nima has a Nokia cell phone, which was designed in Finland, assembled in China using chipsets that were engineered at Qualcomm in San Diego. Later on, Nima realizes that he is short on fuel, so he stops at the Shell gas station to fill up his gas tank. Now remember, Shell is a British multinational oil company. The gas Nima buys was actually extracted probably from a well, an oil well in Saudi Arabia by a French oil company. And then that oil was transported all the way to California in a ship owned and operated by a Norwegian company. Now, this is just the beginning of the day for Nima. I already feel dizzy describing how much globalization touches Nima's life. This scenario is not really far-fetched. This is the real world we all live in today. In Tehran, Cairo, Johannesburg in South Africa, Islamabad, Doha, this is the reality of life for everybody. This is the reality of everyday life. Now, I painted this dramatic picture for you to make a point. Globalization is so ingrained in our everyday life, it is not reversible. We cannot escape it. It is here to stay. And we all have to live with its consequences. Let me give you a little background information about the history of globalization. Globalization is nothing new, despite what a lot of people think. It has a very long history. Now, what is new is the high rate of globalization which we have been witnessing in the past few decades. Thanks to rapid advancements in communication technology as well as transportation. Now, these advancements have put globalization in high gears to the extent that the juggernaut of globalization is unstoppable. Nobody can stop it anymore. Now, globalization has been in the works for a long, long time. It has a long history. The Silk Road, built some 2,200 years ago, a couple of centuries before Jesus Christ, was an early attempt at globalization. The Silk Road was an ancient trade route, as you all know, about 4,000 miles long. The Silk Road linked China in Asia to Rome in Europe, a very massive project. Commodities such as silk, wool, gold, silver, spices, and so forth were transported back and forth in different directions on this road. Also, perhaps more importantly, ideas, philosophies, ways of thinking, religions were also carried back and forth on this road. That's how, for example, China received Nestorian Christianity from the West and Buddhism from India via the Silk Road. Christianity and Islam played a major part in the spread and acceptance of globalization. I don't know whether you have ever given this some thought or not, whether you really appreciate this aspect of Christianity and Islam. No, in my opinion, no other force in history was as critical for globalization than these two religions. That's why Islam and Christianity are the only two world religions, only two global religions. Islam and Christianity are truly global in their reach as well as their message. Christianity and Islam were born in a world that was essentially tribal in all respects. The world in which Jesus Christ appeared, the world in which the Prophet Muhammad appeared, was tribal. People associated with their own tribe. But these two religions introduced a novel idea. What was that novel idea? As different as people look, as different as people speak, eat or drink, they share a common root. Their root is not in a tribe, but in one God. I cannot really overemphasize how revolutionary this idea was. I think Sa'di, our illustrious Persian poet, had beautifully captured this revolutionary idea of Christianity and Islam in his famous poem. I'm sure all of you, or at least the Iranians and the Farsi-speaking folks in this forum, have this poem in memory. بنی آدم اعضای یک پیکرند که در آفرینش ز یک گوهرند. چو عضوی به درد آورد روزگار، دگر عضوها را نماند قرار. تو که از مهنت دیگران بی غمی، نشاید که نامت نهند آدمی. Sa'di says, human beings are members of a whole, in creation of one essence and soul. If one member is afflicted with pain, other members uneasy will remain. If you have no sympathy for human pain, the name of human you cannot retain. Did you know that this poem of Sa'di is posted in the entrance hall of the United Nations? And remember, the United Nations is the highest formal expression of globalization. Hopefully now you appreciate the monumental work that Christianity and Islam have done. These two great religions united people of different races, ethnicities, and cultures under one roof. I really think the annual pilgrimage of Hajj best illustrates the globalist vision of Islam. Islam and Christianity, for that matter, have a globalist vision, and the Hajj captures that. I'm sure all of you at least have heard of Malcolm X. Malcolm X was a tribalist, even a black racist. But he experienced a transformation when he made the ritual of Hajj. Take a listen to how Malcolm X describes his transformation in Hajj. Malcolm X says, quote, "Here were tens of thousands of pilgrims from all over the world. They were of all colors, from blue-eyed blondes to black-skinned Africans. But we were all participating in the same ritual, displaying a spirit of unity and brotherhood that my experiences in America had led me to believe never could exist between the white and non-white." Very powerful, very powerful. Christianity and Islam laid the intellectual foundations for a global village. This global village that you and I live in today would not be possible without 2,000 years of intellectual work, thanks to Christianity and Islam in particular. One of the lofty goals of these two religions was to do away with tribal affinity, tribal mentality, we against they, we versus the other, which is, by the way, part and parcel to tribalism and nationalism. I often in my talks emphasize that nationalism is a form of tribalism. So, suffice it to say, that globalization has a long history. What is new is the pace and the high rate of globalization in recent times, which has produced a rising backlash against globalization around the world. Let me talk about that issue for a few minutes. You see, change is difficult. Going from tribalism to a global village is very painful. What makes matters worse is that change always has winners and losers. Winners and losers. The hyper-globalization of the past century also has had winners and losers. Losers of globalization increasingly lash out against globalization. At one level, the Taliban in Afghanistan and their counterparts in Iran, Trumpism in America, Brexit in the UK, these are all manifestations of the globalization backlash. To better understand why there is a rising backlash against globalization, let's delve deeper into what globalization entails and see what its perceived upsides and downsides are. Globalization has many dimensions. Perhaps the dimension you and I are most familiar with is economic globalization. As our dear brother Farshid knows firsthand, globalization provides a competitive advantage to businesses. How? Well, businesses profit more when their costs are lower. Thanks to globalization, businesses can buy raw materials from countries where they are less expensive. Businesses also take advantage of lower labor costs in developing countries. That's why many American companies move their production lines to China and Vietnam, for example. Many businesses also outsourced their call centers and information technology services to India. Now, this is a win-win situation. Consumers benefit because globalization decreases the cost of manufacturing goods. So companies can offer goods at a lower price to consumers. As economists tell us, the average cost of goods is a key determinant of a standard of living. We all want to have higher standards of living. Politicians constantly brag about their achievements in the office because they have managed to raise the standard of living for their constituents. Well, guess what? The average cost of good is a key determinant of the standard of living. When cost of goods go down, standards of living go up. That's the win for Americans. Developing countries also win because globalization brings them jobs, brings them higher incomes and higher standards of living for their ordinary people. China, India, Vietnam are prime examples where globalization lifted millions of people out of poverty. But globalization has had losers as well. just visit the Rust Belt in the U.S., Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Missouri, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Many workers in these states lost their jobs when local companies moved their operations overseas. These folks who were the losers of economic globalization lashed out by voting for Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential election. Economic globalization also takes a toll on people psychologically, a psychological toll. How? Well, in the globalized economic system, there will be relative free movement of labor and capital across borders. Capital goes where profit margins are higher. Jobs, on the other hand, will go wherever wages are lower. And this free movement of labor and capital is quite disruptive for people's lives. Inevitably, in this arrangement, life will be less predictable for people, life will be less secure and more stressful. Anxiety and all sorts of other mental disorders will definitely follow. So this is the economic aspect of globalization. But globalization also has a political dimension. Let me explain briefly. With the French and American revolutions, a new territorial political arrangement was born, nation-state. In this arrangement, people live as citizens within fixed borders. The nation has a government which is responsible for the nation's security and welfare. Now, here is a critical thing. The government is sovereign. This is perhaps the key for understanding the backlash against political globalization. In the nation-state model, the government of the nation is sovereign, meaning the government has exclusive authority over its citizens within its borders. Government, national governments, the national government is not accountable to outsiders. In a nutshell, that's what nation states mean. برای عزیزانی که خیلی با مفهوم sovereignty آشنایی ندارن توضیح کوتاهی بدم. ببینید sovereignty در زبان فارسی ترجمه میکنن معمولا به اقتدار، قدرت مطلق، حق انحصاری سلطه و حکومت. هر نظام سیاسی، حالا چه این نظام سیاسی سلطانی باشه و چه جمهوری، درش sovereignty وجود داره. در نظام جمهوری sovereignty با مردم هست یا دست کم با منتخبان مردم. در نظامات سلطانی، حالا چه نظام پادشاهی باشه یا ولایت فقیه، sovereignty با شخص اول، شخص حاکم، یعنی پادشاه یا ولی فقیه هست. Now let's move on to the backlash of political globalization and how it happened. Well, World War I and World War II were the bloodiest conflicts in human history. In the span of less than 30 years, 80 million people 80 million people lost their lives as a result of these wars. Entire cities were laid to ruin. Now, clearly this rate of destruction was not sustainable, particularly for Europe. So European nations, which bore the brunt of casualties and destructions in World War I and World War II, changed course. They said, let's opt for cooperation rather than conflict, because we all lose in these wars. Let's cooperate on trade, security, and also health to avoid conflict. That was the whole idea behind the emergence of international organizations in the aftermath of World War II. The United Nations, NATO, the World Health Organization, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, all of these organizations are tasked to create norms and rules that all countries must follow. This is the critical point for my good brother Darius. In these organizations that are tasked to create norms and rules, that not only reduces the possibility of conflict, but more importantly, these shared norms and rules integrates nation states into a global system. That's how it works. But there is a price to be paid. Can you guess what that price is? Sovereign nations must be willing to give up a little bit of their national sovereignty. This means that national governments are now constrained. National governments are constrained. They cannot do whatever they damn please anymore. In other words, authority is increasingly transferred from nation states to international institutions, such as the United Nations. This does not sit well with nationalists. Nationalists identify with their own nation, with their own tribe. Nationalists pursue the interests of their own nations, especially to the exclusion, to the detriment of the interests of other nations. That's what Donald Trump's slogan, America First, is all about. That was the key thing that we discussed in our conversation on Tuesday at Unfiltered. Right? That's Trumpism in America is essentially an anti-globalization movement. So, fear of loss of national sovereignty is the driver for the backlash against political globalization. Now, globalization also has a cultural dimension. Perhaps this dimension, the cultural dimension, is the most unsettling aspect of globalization for many people around the world. Up until a few decades ago, most human communities lived in relative isolation. Each community had a unique culture, unique norms, values, traditions. Now, culture provides critical functions for a people. Culture gives people, first and foremost, a shared identity. It provides each community member with a sense of groundness, of being grounded. Culture is also gives stability and cohesion to the community. These are very valuable services that culture provides. Globalization turned everything upside down for national cultures. Let me repeat one more time. Globalization turned everything upside down for national cultures. How? Well, globalization, by its very nature, seeks homogeneity. Homogeneity. Sameness. Sameness. Our globalized world today is rapidly becoming similar culturally. When you make Hajj, you don't have to worry. Because when you go from Fresno to Mecca, pretty much you're not going to notice much change. You can still drink your favorite coffee at Starbucks in Mecca. For lunch, you can get your delicious cheeseburger at McDonald's. When you're done with your, you know, with your visitation to the Holy Shrine of Kaaba, you go back to your hotel and you can watch all of your favorite shows on TV. The same shows that you watch on TV in Fresno. That's the homogeneity that I'm talking about. Our globalized world is rapidly becoming culturally similar. Hollywood, internet, social media, they are all hard at work to create one global culture. Here is the sad thing for many of you in this forum today. Are you with me? Please pay attention. Communities that are weak economically, politically, militarily, their culture will be overrun by the juggernaut of globalization. Sorry, there is no democracy for cultural selection. Since today the West is dominant scientifically, intellectually, economically, and militarily, the global culture is strikingly Western and secular. Global culture that is propagating all over the world is strikingly Western and secular. At least for now. We don't know what the future holds, especially as China and India become the most powerful nations in less than 20 to 30 years. If you happen to be a secular Westerner, this is heaven for you. You are the winner. But if you are not secular and or non-Westerner, you are the loser in this game. So, cultural globalization spells loss of identity for a lot of people all over the world. And loss of identity creates anxiety, insecurity, fear. That is the source or the driver for the backlash against globalization. White nationalists and Christian nationalists in the U.S., the Taliban in Afghanistan, traditional families in Iran and India, they all have one thing in common. Fear. Fear. The globalized world is a scary place to live in for these people. They don't recognize the world around them. Evangelical Christians, Orthodox Jews, Catholics routinely complain that they do not recognize America anymore. Their displeasure with loss of identity ultimately shows its head in their voting behavior. As you probably know, evangelicals were a crucial part of Donald Trump's base in the 2016 and 2020 presidential elections. Trump exploited their genuine fear, and all Republican presidential candidates are wooing evangelicals again. So in a nutshell, this is the history, this is what globalization means, its history, and the backlash against it that we are seeing all over the world today. This is the end of my first sermon. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I will close my sermon with a couple of concluding remarks. First, since the ancient times, people have been comfortable trading with their neighbors. So, economic globalization has a good chance of survival because overall, more or less, it spreads the benefits and rewards to all nations. So, I think economic globalization has a good chance of survival. But political and especially cultural globalization will face stiff opposition. The rise of populism in Europe and the US is proof. Far-right parties have gained significant grounds all over Europe. In our own country here, Trumpism is very strong. Both right-wing parties in Europe and Trumpism in America are against globalization. And by the way, Trumpism will outlive Donald Trump. With or without Donald Trump, we will have Trumpism on our hands to contend with for the foreseeable future in the US. The second point, political globalization will put greater and greater pressure on nation states. The nation state model will probably not survive. And here is the critical thing that I did not bring up in our conversation on Tuesday, Darius. I don't think the nation-state model will survive. It is not clear what the alternative would be. One alternative to nation-state could be regional blocs. Regional blocs such as the European Union or the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it was established by China and Russia in 2001. Iran, India, Pakistan, and many former Soviet republics such as Tajikistan and Uzbekistan since then have joined SCO. NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Organization, may become a lot stronger than today, and it may become a North American bloc. Under this model, competition will be among blocs, not nations anymore. So now blocs will compete politically and economically against each other. The other alternative, which is very, very unsettling for a lot of people, is a world government. So nation state has the potential in the future to be replaced by a world government, a global federal system, not unlike the United States of America. In any case, the demise of nation state will create a new dynamic for human affairs. This is obviously uncharted territory. One thing is for sure, though. Humanity is in for a tough ride going ahead. So, we're running out of time. I have to stop right here. Hopefully, I can pick up this subject if you are interested in a future sermon.